Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Terry Beckman, welcome to the conversation today.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here.
It is a pleasure to be with you. You're joining us from North Carolina. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. And today we're going to be talking about reconciling the CEO's capacity dilemma. I'm super excited about unpacking that with you and exploring what this means, both in a traditional corporate setting, but also within the nonprofit sector. And as we get started, I wanted to share Terry's bio with everybody. Terry Beckman and her experienced team at Heigl help mission-driven leaders increase revenue and community impact by an average of 50% within 12 months of working together. Terry has worked in business and organizational development for over 30 years, including 5 years as an executive director. She understands leadership challenges and has been a strategic advisor and consultant to executive directors and CEOs throughout the United States as they grew their organizations, teams, and boards of directors. And that's just a snapshot of Terry and all the cool things you do, Terry. But anything else you would like to highlight by way of your background or personal context before we dive on in further?
Well, I would say the other thing that is a thread through a lot of my work is my background in Buddhist psychology, and that frames a lot of the work that we do. I've found over the years that Eastern philosophy and in particular Buddhism has an incredible understanding of the mind. And we in the West are kind of catching up to that now, which is very cool. And it's just really cool, too, to see how, like, the latest in neuroscience aligns exactly with, you know, teachings that are 2,000 years old.
Go figure.
Anyway, just to share that kind of tidbit as well. But thank you for the kind introduction.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you framing it with your Buddhist influences and background. And while I'm not Buddhist, I've been heavily influenced by Buddhist philosophies as well. I've spent an extended period of time in many Asian countries and consider myself, you know, while not a practicing Buddhist, certainly a kind of a novice, someone who dabbles in Buddhist philosophy. And I think, like you say, it brings a lot of really great insights into how we're trying to deal with the complexities of the world around us today.
Yeah. Thank you. Absolutely.
Well, let's start by talking about this CEO capacity dilemma. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. You know, what we've seen in the market in the last few years, I think certainly coming out of COVID, is this interesting phenomenon where many leaders are having trouble hiring, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the phenomenon of quiet quitting that kind of contributes to folks not being able to run companies as productively as they would like, mm-hmm. but also having open positions that are, you know, difficult to fill and turnover rates that people have been very unhappy with. It seems to be stabilizing some, I think, with incomes, with, you know, basically salaries increasing in the last year or so. We're seeing a little bit less vacancies, which is really great. Mm-hmm. But I know in certain areas, especially with frontline workers, it's still really, really a challenge to fill those positions in certain industries. And the turnover rate still continues to be higher than folks would like. And so we have that going on, right, which you would call probably under capacity, folks mm-hmm. operating at under capacity. And then you have the you know, the workforce that is there and engaged, and many of them feeling like they're really at overcapacity, right? And they're clearly they're linked. And we see that in data where people are talking about, you know, very high percentages of folks that quit are referencing burnout, and just looking for, you know, looking for something else, looking for more work-life balance. So it's this sort of interesting contradiction of living with both overcapacity and undercapacity at the same time within organizations.
Yeah, the over-under element and the burnout piece, I think it's really important to highlight really the challenges that we're facing within organizations. And oftentimes we do talk about the burnout that general kind of line level people are experiencing, even middle managers, et cetera. And sometimes we don't talk about the overall impact that's having on executive leadership roles, because just as I can experience burnout in my day-to-day, so can they. And hopefully, you know, hopefully I have leader, you know, a team lead who is has emotional intelligence and empathy, and they can see me for where I'm at and try to be supportive of me. But do they always have that person that they report to that also provides that kind of support? And I think often not. And so there's this heavy burden from a burnout perspective that's placed on leaders. You know, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt and assume that people have the best of intentions. And yet a lot of times leaders who I think have good intentions simply don't have the capacity to do what's expected in this new age of leadership. You know, maybe they don't have the bandwidth, certainly, but also the skill sets needed that are different today to be an effective leader versus, you know, maybe how someone could have been successful 20 years ago. So, you know, I think all of this kind of feeds into what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a, you know, I think organizations are just infinitely more complex in this new age. And we talk often about the, you know, kind of the pyramid where, you know, the CEO is at the top and has the vision and kind of is able to tell people what to do if they want to keep their jobs and do it, right? It just doesn't work very well anymore in a culture where we're highly interconnected, intergenerational, lots of ways to make money on the side, right? Mm-hmm. Or even full-time, just people have so many more options. Yeah, that model is from kind of the industrial age. It's just not meant really for today's workforce. But, you know, then it leaves the open this question of how do we develop like truly collaborative leadership models where people's voices can be heard in a way that's productive and, you know, unleashes the best in everyone. And it's, it requires an entirely different set of skills for sure.
You've touched on this already, but what do you see this contradiction costing, this under capacity, operating under capacity and employees operating over capacity? What is this really costing businesses in practical terms? Both, I suppose, both from the business perspective, kind of the bottom line, but also the human perspective.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jonathan. I would say it's very expensive, honestly. You know, we work a lot with mission-driven organizations. And for example, we've had clients where they simply couldn't hire enough early childhood development teachers, right? And so whole classrooms then, I mean, there's a teacher-student ratio. If you can't hire the teachers, there's not enough adults in the room, you know, you can't have the classroom essentially. So like things just, and that's a huge revenue loss for the organization, right? Like they actually have the funding to be able to have multiple classrooms and they literally can't do it because they don't have the workers in place. So, I mean, for organizations like that, it's a real bottom line thing. There's a real loss of productivity and revenue that happens because of that. And I think then on the human side, you know, just the cost of burnout is really high. And it's, you know, stress is we know is very connected to both our mental and physical health. And so this can be seen, you know, this can be seen in all kinds of ways, right? Through higher, you know, higher use of medical facilities and insurance rates. I mean, if you want to, like, again, get right back down to the bottom line, but on a human level, right, we don't want our team members sick. We don't want our team members burning out and stressed, not being able to sleep at night, being preoccupied, being distracted at work. All of that has an effect on productivity, and it also spreads, right? It's, you know, if somebody's unhappy at work, it affects their teammates for sure, right? It's a drag. It's literally a drag on the organization. And, you know, it's also just in a way, a loss of a human life, at least in those moments, which is, you know, a tragedy unto itself that I think it really is unnecessary. It's possible to organize ourselves, I think, in a different way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think I agree that both the business cost, like the bottom line cost, is high. The human cost is high. And so we do need to organize ourselves in a different way. What do you see that looking like? You know, because like you said, you know, certainly loss of productivity from burnout, absenteeism, goes up from burnout, quality usually goes down from burnout, et cetera. Like, we could list so many different things, that are direct byproducts, that come from burnout, that negatively impact the organization, certainly impact the people within the organization. You know, as I've experienced burnout at various times in my career, I also just note, you know, I'm someone, I, you know, not to toot my own horn too much, but I think I'm a highly productive person. I think I collaborate well. I think I have an innovative entrepreneurial mindset. Like, I think there's a lot I bring to the table. And yeah, once I hit that burnout stage, guess what? I'm dialing down big time because what's the point anymore? Like, I'm kind of fed up. I'm frustrated. I don't see any reason to continue pushing to the level that I had pushed previously. And that can be a loss to me, but it's particularly a loss to the organization, and it's a loss to the other people that I work with.
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you see as some of those things that organizations can do to reorganize around this idea of addressing this capacity dilemma, so that we help to reduce burnout, so we keep people activated, engaged, and happy in the work that they're doing, where they feel fulfilled and they can contribute in meaningful ways, in a sustainable way?
Yeah. That's a huge question, right? And I wish it had a simple answer. so I, you know, and I just could be flippant and try to give you a simple answer, but, you know, it's not really a good use of your listeners' time, I don't think. I think maybe just to give folks a few ideas on a couple of different levels, right? One is, if we're talking about it kind of the, you know, the organizational level, right, in terms of how we're organized and how we're working. So earlier we referenced like the pyramid, right, where, you know, sort of this top-down structure. And what we found working with our clients is that they don't necessarily need to change their organizational structure, although if we're doing kind of strategic visioning work with them, right, and they need to pivot and move in a new direction, then oftentimes we do need to look at the org chart, right? But, you know, to address this issue per se, that isn't, you know, I'm not necessarily a fan of a flat org chart, because that creates its own problems as well. Mm-hmm. But I think in a collaborative leadership model, what happens is that the role of the senior team starts to change. So it's not so much telling people what to do, which has been a lot of how we have operated for a long time, but it becomes much more one where, and this does assume that the organization really does have a shared vision for the future. and that the team understands where the organization is going and they understand their role in it, right? So, and that very much is the job of the CEO and the leadership team, is to create that awareness and to go to the trouble of, of setting that, right? So it's clear for folks, this is where we're going. This is why having people ideally contribute, that's, to that shared vision as well, so that it truly is shared. And often if it's done well, that the vision strengthens with other people's participation in it. But once that's established, then the role of the senior team becomes, you don't have to tell people what to do because they actually Right. know what their role is. But they become, then that senior team becomes the resource providers, right? Mm-hmm. Giving people the resources to be able to reach their goals. The obstacle removers, right? Because
right.
we're going from A to B, there's going to be obstacles. And sometimes mm-hmm. the individual or a specific team, the obstacle may be such systemic in a way that they can't remove it by themselves, right? So that's another role. And then really, I think, engaging in a coaching model of feedback, right? Versus kind of, let's have our, once a year evaluation and, that everybody dreads on all sides. And, right. you hear all the bad news, right? Of all the things you've done wrong and whether or not you're going to get your raise. Like, that's also extremely antiquated. So we want to be able to be getting regular feedback and knowing, how am I doing? How's my team doing? How's the organization doing? And like moving forward on our objectives and where we get stuck. And if we have personal challenges, which everyone does, mm-hmm. that you're getting the kind of support and encouragement and accountability is what it creates, but it's really, and support and encouragement to move through those challenges. What I've seen is it takes about a year to shift company culture to move in that direction, right? Once you've decided you want to do this and you start to change the kind of the meeting structure and the way you're communicating with folks and your role, it takes about a year for everybody to get on board. So it's not something that happens like just because you say it's going to happen. I think, so that's kind of one level that decreases burnout, honestly, because people feel much less isolated and they understand like how their role is connected to others. And you really start to feel like you're moving there as a team and an organization versus, I'm stuck in this kind of siloed department and we're just fighting for what, we're going to do. And I'm going to do as little as possible because I don't really know how my work affects anything else. And I want to get home and see my kids at night. It just creates a different kind of participation and mindset, if that makes sense. I think the other thing that leaders can look at on, in sort of particular sectors, right? Like if you're having a lot of turnover, say, in hiring direct service workers, for example, understanding, I think, what's really important to them in terms of the work, right? And especially for frontline staff, like what is really important to them, and then sharing what's important. This goes back to kind of the vision and the values, sharing with them what's important to the organization and what their role is in meeting kind of the vision and the goals of the organization. And then seeing like where is the vent, right? Where can we meet that both are really accomplished? And what we've seen in helping organizations be able to reduce turnover and burnout in that way is often there are folks want growth opportunities that are not being provided and that the employer doesn't even understand that, what growth opportunities truly are important to those employees, and making the effort to actually, provide those opportunities for folks. So again, there's like a sense of belonging, a sense of being heard, a sense that there's like a future for me here, And I'm not just a cog in the wheel, you know, turning. You know, we love to look at really, I know you do a lot of work with human capital and really looking at the full life cycle of an employee in an organization. What does that look like from, you know, the time you're recruiting all the way through when they're leaving, right? And how can you be strategic in really aligning individuals' needs with the organization's needs so that it's a good experience for everyone?
Yeah, very well said. There are so many gems to what you just explained. Bottom line here is that we absolutely need to make sure that we're always focusing on not only the sustainability of our organization, that's important. If we don't have funding streams, if we don't have revenue, we won't continue to exist and we won't continue to operate. So we need to pay attention to the business case and the bottom line. But sometimes we allow ourselves to get distracted from the humanity involved with what we're trying to accomplish and the people involved. And the human case is just as powerful, just as strong. And I think you've done a good job of connecting the two, and how that impacts organizations and how it impacts purpose-driven leaders, leaders that want to do meaningful things and help their teams to do meaningful things as well. Terry, I know we could continue on with this conversation for quite a long time, but I also note the time and I need to let you go here in a few minutes. Before we wrap things up for today, I just wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, and then give us a final word on the topic for today.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Jonathan. Yeah, people can find us at highgol.co, HIGOL.CO. And we host monthly roundtables for CEOs of mission-driven organizations, larger organizations with at least revenues over 5 million annually, on critical topics such as this throughout the year. So they're complimentary, and it's just a wonderful way to meet leaders from across the country and walk away with, you know, some new insights and feel refreshed after, you know, an hour and a half or so together. So you can go to our website and learn more about that. You know, sign up to get an invitation to one of those. And I'm also on LinkedIn, so you can find me there. Those are probably the best ways to connect with us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Terry. It's been a real pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Terry and our team can do for you. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.